you like trans people, great news. From March 31st to April 12th, there will be over 40 shows made by trans folks happening on live stream and video on demand and in person in Los Angeles. Check out The Joy Who Lived, a trans theater and comedy festival featuring incredible art, including a live reading written and directed by me and my wife and writing partner, Susan, of our original pilot, Robo Waitress Assassins. In a world where murder is legal, a cybernetic waitress is used to assassinate anyone the mega company known as corporate wants out of the way. But a personal catastrophe spurs her to defy her programming and expose corporate to save others like herself. A full cast live reading of a trans, queer, cyberpunk action dramedy pilot full of action, humor, and heart, and about how society controls our bodily autonomy and pits us against each other to keep us from rising up. Check it out at joywholived.com, where you can support the festival, get tickets, and learn how to get involved. Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. It's time to look at some of the absolute weirdest instances of trans rep or lack thereof in trans representation in 2025 Media Part 3, TV Part 2. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady who always gets asked if she works here, Susan Bridges.
Hello.
Everywhere you go.
That is true. People ask me for help everywhere I go.
It's because you always look like you know what you're doing.
It is bonkers.
You're
it's
just
wild.
You give like resting competent face. It's like that person seems like she knows what she's doing.
I give off harmless middle-aged white lady vibes, I guess. Like,
what's better than giving off the Karen vibes?
Right? I will the last time this happened, I was getting an oil change. I was sitting outside and a woman came into the oil change parking lot just to ask me where the nearest T-Mobile store was. And then she left. She was not there for an oil change.
She saw you.
Saw me from the street.
Pulled in
and asked me specifically.
Yeah. Like, you just seem like you know what you're doing. Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. So yeah, it is wild.
Huh. Well, our returning guest is Jesse Earle. Welcome back again, Jesse.
Yay! Excited to be here. Yay. And also my cat Kipo, who is currently making biscuits on my lap right now. So if you hear purring going on, that is Kipo.
That's nice.
All kitties are welcome on this show. All right. First, be sure you've listened to episodes 144 and 145 for the 2025 Trans Rep in Media Part 1 movies and Part 2 TV Part 1, because these are all part of a whole and we're trying to get an idea of the bigger picture of where things are at. Onward. Loot season 3-1. Okay, this has been the single weirdest show for years. Let's talk about this. MJ Rodriguez continues to have a lead supporting role as Sophia, but see the 2022 Trans Rep and Media Report in episode 3 and the 2024 Trans Rep and Media Report in episodes 97 to 99 for the way this show just really wants to not say Sophia is trans, but also doesn't want to say she's cis.
So they keep
her in this nebulous area where you just don't know, meaning most viewers will assume she's cis and never think twice about it. But it seems like since MJ is such a notable trans actress, they also don't want to say she's not trans and piss off all her fans. It is a very baffling thing. This isn't a trans thing, but the season premiere is all about how funny it is that old people have bodies and might still like sex, which I feel kind of illustrates where some of the humor in the show is coming from. We don't need to make fun of people whose bodies are different in appearance or ability, actually. Here's some more weirdness. In episode 2, Sophia asks a friend to pick up her sister, Destiny, who didn't connect with her real name, Nicole. It is a joke about names, about how giving yourself your own name is goofy, actually, and they gave it to the trans woman who they don't say is trans. What the heck?
That's wild.
I know, right? And this stuff happens. They do it all the time. There's more. Okay. In this episode, non-binary actor Jesse Lee, who stole every scene they were in on Rutherford Falls, has a small role. The character is not mentioned as being non-binary. In episode 3, they're in England, and there's food with goofy names, one of which is, quote, Soldier's Tit. Sure. In episode 4...
Sounds tasty.
In episode 4, a guy is getting to train his trainers at the gym and tells them to, quote, suck their fupas in and, quote, get those tits out. Two implicit jokes in the span of two sentences, come on. In episode 6, MJ Rodriguez's Sophia is mad that Howard is dating her sister, and he says, quote, we're being safe, I'm on the pill. Come on. Here's something really weird. In episode 7, Sophia says she moved across the country to get away from her family and their, quote, very different people, with no other reason given. And then she thanks a group of guys for inviting her to their guys' game night, which is a thing a trans woman might be incredibly conflicted about.
Yeah.
I cannot comprehend what this show is doing with MJ and her character. It is baffling.
In episode 8. What in the world?
Right? In episode 8, Arthur is asked to wear an outfit without a shirt, and he says, quote, my boobs will be out. We're still doing this, I guess. That outfit is like an open-chested tux with a cape that says pussy on the lining, and Molly's outfit is a giant bow that says cock on the lining. You see, because putting words for genitalia associated with one cisgender person on the other cisgender person's clothes is funny in some alternate universe, maybe. Yeah. In episode 9, Molly is dating a younger man, and Sophia, played by a trans woman, says, quote, you're turning gender roles on their head, which is a nothing burger on its own. But again, giving it to the trans woman to say is some kind of weird. In episode 10, Sophia goes to a congressional representative for legal help, and an aide there mentions she should run for office to take the rep's place. Hold up. She is trans, and someone's going to ask her to run for office? Who hasn't seen the state of American politics and trans people within that system? What are you doing? Just acknowledge her transness, please, or at least confirm the character is cis. It's all so bizarre. Later in the episode, one cis lady asks another cis lady if she's, quote, yanking her rod.
Yeah, that's so weird. Because especially, like, asking her to run for office, I'm not saying, like, you, like, trans people shouldn't run for office, but, like, you have to acknowledge, like, being trans right. would be a thing that would come up, like, to at least put it mildly.
It would complicate your running for office, and it's just ignored. I don't...
That's so weird. And also, just to go back, like, I despise things that do the, oh, isn't old people wanting sex creepy or bad or disgusting?
Gross.
It
angers
me. It's why everyone was loving that trilogy of movies like X and Pearl and those three like horror movies that came out over the past few years. And I hated that first one. Not only was it kind of a boring kind of movie, but like one of the big scares in the horror movie is a girl is trapped underneath a bed and then two of the old people who are like murdering them come in and they have sex above her on the bed. And it's very much played as like, oh, isn't it gross that two old people are having sex above her? And that's, and it's part of the horror. And I'm like, screw off with it, all of that. Like, I just hate that sort of stuff. It really
I mean, that episode also has two jokes about how funny it is that one old woman walks with a walker and is very slow. Like, isn't it funny how slow she is when we asked for something fast? And
yeah, that was really just... Mm-hmm.
That is ableist. It is ageist. It's just like, you don't need to do that. But the stuff with MJ, they've done this for 3 seasons
so
in a row.
So many times.
They fall in this weird that they don't want to commit either way, and it makes for some really weird crap.
But they clearly, and I haven't seen the whole show, but like clearly they are aware of her being trans if they're giving her these jokes. And like, there's it really weirds as reads just again, having not seen the show, so like, this is just me leaving the description. It reads as transphobic, of like, we're gonna give the trans person this thing to say to like be our weird, like, cis idea of trans people, and like, oh, look how performative it's there's something in there that just
there
feels
is something
very
weird going on.
Feels very trans, like it feels like implicit or even weirdly explicit transphobia. It just feels like there's a lot of just transphobia, like in those
Yeah.
decisions, implicit transphobia of just like, oh, we'll give all the gender stuff to her without any recognition of what that would mean.
Yeah, without ever actually saying for anybody that she's actually, it's so okay, it's messed up. Let's move on. Man on the Inside, Season 2, Zero. A cranky old man known for being kind of a bigot calls Charles, who works for a private investigator, quote, Nancy Drew. I think the gag is meant to be, look how this old man is a clueless sexist, but nobody really reacts to it or calls him on it or makes him the butt of the joke. So sadly, all it does is perpetuate misgendering as funny, which it's not. There's also a lot of teen kids in this who call everyone bro, including their mom.
I will say, Man on the Inside, I do really love that show overall.
Yeah.
And it's speaking of a show that showcases older people wanting to desire to have relationships, not necessarily sex. It's a very not sex. There's not a lot of sex in the show, but it
Yeah.
does show like older people like having loving relationships and romantic
Yeah.
relationships, which I really like. So.
And season two is really great because it stars Ted Danson, and season two has his wife in it, Mary Steenburgen, who plays his love interest. And you can see in some of the scenes he kind of breaks because he's so charmed by, he's like, that's my wife and she's amazing. And it's so cute.
It's adorable.
Absolutely adorable.
Adorable. The whole show is very cozy, adorable. I really like
It
it a lot.
is. It is. Murderbot season one, two. Oh, here we go. Okay. Non-binary actor Sabrina Wu plays non-binary character Pin Lee. They, them pronouns are used. Murderbot itself is also non-binary. Its pronouns are it, its. Here's my issue with this. Murderbot is played by a cis white man, Alexander Skarsgård, and the showrunners are two cis white men. The thing is, not only is Murderbot non-binary, it experiences all kinds of marginalization and discrimination for being what it is. And to give that role to a cis white man and to have the show run by cis white men feels like appropriation of a trans role. It's kind of allowing cis white men to play at being marginalized, and it's a leading role that should have gone to a non-binary actor at the very least. It is possible that Alexander Skarsgård or even one of the showrunners, Paul Weitz and Chris Weitz, is non-binary and not out, or is non-binary and doesn't know yet, and that's why any or all of them may have been particularly drawn to Murderbot. But even if that's the case, you have to be conscious that as far as the entire world knows, you are three cisgender white men who have taken a non-binary lead character and co-opted them for cisgender white men, and that is not good. There are so many fabulous non-binary actors who never get a shot at a lead role who would have been fabulous. Not to mention the way you could have undermined the quote-unquote strong cis white man action hero type by casting anyone other than a strong cis white man. Murderbot is a robot. It doesn't need to look muscular. It shoots lasers and has future armor. Literally any body type would have worked and allowed someone who doesn't look tall, muscular, and imposing to be an action star. So this one is very complicated for multiple reasons.
It's also just it changes the story because
Yeah.
I've read the novellas now, or at least some of them, not all of them, and I really like the show generally speaking, but this one did stick in my craw a little bit because if you look at what the show is talking about, it's talking about how non or at least the novellas are talking about like how making this robot non-binary is part of the way that it is dehumanized and part of
Yeah.
the way that like it's a conscious choice for them, the company, to make them non-binary, to make the robots generally speaking non-binary, and that is how Murderbot kind of views itself and has to like fight back to like kind of like view itself as a person and like
Yeah.
break some of that programming that has been literally put into it. And then the show, by making the character cis strong white dude, just visually says something different about what the company is doing, about like, oh, it
Yep.
says something about like, oh, we want these robots not to be dehumanized, but to be soldiers and to present as like looking strong. And it's like the entire themes of what the show is trying to say about how robots are thought about within this world are changed by the different choice of actor.
Yeah.
And not to say either one is a wrong theme, but it is a different type of thing. And
Yeah.
it says something different, and it says something different than what the books are doing. And so, like, it really kind of bugged me about like them not realizing how it would change the underlying themes of what the show is or what the books were trying to say. And it bugs me.
Yeah, me too, because especially because again, like there's so few lead roles for not just non-binary actors, but non-binary actors who don't look typically like action stars. And like you could have done something so subversive and said something so important with that, and you just didn't. And it, I remember when the casting was announced, how mad you got, Susan.
I wasn't thrilled.
Because you're a big fan of the books.
I am, and it is like now having seen the show, like it just feels like it rips the heart out of it. Like now it's just a pew pew fighting show. And I also think it does speak to the fact that you have cis white men running it and having cast a cis white man in this role and being treated like a marginalized person and the cis white man feeling like that's interesting. And
That
it's
is not a
like,
thing they
but
have
it is the lived
experienced
experience of so many
of so
people
many
and
people who could have
things.
said
It just
something
feels
that,
like all the context has been stripped out.
Yeah,
and like again, it just goes to like if you're making it the strong muscular dude, like people on in the show, like the characters who are these scientists, like would react to just like the robot differently based on their own implicit biases of bodies and stuff. And like in the show, there is a little element. It's like, oh, he's strong. Talking about Alex Charger, like Mirabot is strong and like can protect us. And like in the book, it's much more like how they don't really look at Murderbot as a person, and it says something different. And yeah, it's very, 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 very frustrating to see. That being said, I will give the show some credit in that I did really like its use of metaphorical autistic representation, like its discussion of like not wanting to look people in the eyes and stuff. Like, still a metaphor, but I thought it was one of the few shows to really capture what it feels like to be on the autism spectrum, because I myself am on the autism spectrum, and I also get very anxious, like trying to make eye contact and stuff. And the show kind of captured that very well. So I will like it's not a
I
complete
would agree
wash
with
on the
that.
show. So, but yeah.
And I think the best way to think about it is like if you had a non-binary lead actor and a non-binary showrunner, how different would that show be? Just think about that yourself, and then that's what it should have been, right? And the perspective change is everything. So, all right. Only Murders in the Building, season 5-0. Also one of the weirdest ones these past few years. There is a scene where Oliver is sweating because he's nervous. Then someone asks him why he's sweating, and he says, quote, "Menopause is difficult for everyone." With a sigh. Later in the same episode, there's a joke about his gender-bent version of the Ten Commandments flopped, and that's not a thing I'd even note for most shows, but given how transphobic this show got last season, I'm not sure if even something as small as this is just a weird joke or some stealth transphobia sneaking in because God doesn't approve of trans people or something. This is what happens when you fall into the transphobic joke trap. Sometimes you can't escape, and we stop giving you the benefit of the doubt. In episode 5, okay, some really weird stuff goes down in a way that seems like it's intentionally trying to stealthily reference transness. This episode features Charles, a cis man, goes on testosterone to make him more virile. Everyone is fine with it, which you might think is a case of cis people get gender-affirming healthcare too. Listen to episode 22 for more on that. But then he says, quote, "I've never been more connected to my body," which, like, is what HRT does for trans people? Listen to Ep 110 of this show for more on HRT. He then says, now he can open jars of pickles, specifically pickles, which are a certified thing with trans femmes. It goes further because this episode also features milky white suppositories, which is how many trans women take progesterone, which usually comes in milky white pills. And then a robot is called a short king, which is apparently derogatory among cis men because, of course, it is, but I hear routinely used as a compliment for trans men. And, like, what is happening here? Is this trying to make up for the massive amounts of implicitly transphobic jokes in season 4? Is it also meant to be derogatory digs at trans people? So much in one episode feels like it cannot be coincidence, but I also cannot parse what they were trying to say with it. Not counting it as jokes at our expense, but it was definitely worth mentioning, even though it is baffling.
It is so weird, especially since we live in a culture now that is trying to like sell men a lot of like hormone replacement stuff and like things like that, and like being like you're not man enough. And there is something fascinating to be said about how gender affirming care for trans people is so villainized, and yet we constantly try to build it in cis men, build up gender dysphoria within cis men, and sell them gender affirming care like, you know, like hormone pills or like whatever right wing people like do with like your hair, like fix your hair or like take this like substitute like stuff. So there's something to be said about that, about how we create gender dysphoria within people to create a market of things to sell to people, and how that is not vilified, but yet gender affirming care for trans people is not vilified. But here it plays as just some weird
It's
joke.
just
I remember this
weird.
episode and being like,
Right? What
what
is
is
happening?
happening?
What are you doing? I don't understand. In another episode, Oliver gets made fun of for wearing turquoise cowboy boots. Someone asks, are those women's? His reply, they're unisex. And there's a joke about Warren Buffett shaving his bikini line because he's a dude and dudes don't wear bikinis. Ha ha ha. In a later episode, there's a joke about Oliver going to a manicurist after he was just sexist about women going to them. And a woman walks into a room of two men and two women and says, what's up, ladies? Then later says, let's go, ladies. It feels like it's intended to be derogatory and not someone saying guys is just an example of societal sexism. And Mabel says, annoyed that the defining characteristic of a ladies' night is everyone having a uterus. Mm-hmm. But not all women have a uterus, thank you. Mm-hmm. The finale reveals that Charles was on a placebo and not actually on testosterone, further muddling whatever was going on in episode 5's multiple stealth trans references. Yep. I don't get it.
I don't know. But it did remind me that a long time ago I worked in an office and I got some guy had mailed a form for male enhancement pills and it got misdelivered to our office.
Okay.
So I went online and I printed an article about how it was a scam and I mailed it back to him with his check. Instead as bring it to the office. Yeah. And I just remembered that.
That's amazing.
I hope he got the help he needed.
I hope so.
There's a really good video by YouTuber Tom Nicholson that he lives in the UK where it's more legal to sell testosterone directly to folks.
Okay. Yeah.
And he did a really great video about like how this is marketed and sold to men and like creates this anxiety in men that they're not man enough and need more testosterone. Like all, and it ties into like anti-trans stuff about like how like, oh, transness, that right wing sort of rhetoric around, oh, transness is a sign of decaying masculinity in our society and da da da, yeah. Da 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 da. So it like ties into all of that stuff in the same, very same way. Because, you know, you have to constantly be the most man you can be, no matter what, all times.
Yeah. Yeah. The Pit, Season 1, 2. Supriya Ganesh uses she-they pronouns and plays Samira Mohan, who is cis. In Episode 4, there is a trans woman sommelier, played by a trans woman, Ava Everett Irving, who is a patient in the ER. We find out she's trans because when they call her back, she's deadnamed because that's what's on her insurance. That's a big oof, but it's also a real thing a lot of trans people have to deal with. I personally have been there. Before she leaves, one of the doctors notices her gender and name were wrong in the system and changed them without even being asked. That is great and a fine example of proactive allyship, as we discussed in episode 35. On the one hand, this is really great representation that presents a trans woman as a human worthy of dignity and respect, just like every cis person is, and even provides a great example to cis people of how to be an accomplice. But also, her entire appearance revolves around getting deadnamed, and while that is a real thing a lot of us deal with all too often, it's also hard when that's the only context we show up in the entire season of a show. It's about the discrimination and barriers we face. This is part of the problem with there being so effing little actual trans representation. Too often it all revolves around our pain and suffering. If we had tons of trans rep with a wide variety of depictions, one or two that only touch on difficult things we experience wouldn't be an issue at all. So this isn't the Pit's fault. They did a good job, though adding another trans character somewhere who didn't have to deal with transphobia would have helped. It's just sad that this is the state of trans representation in media.
I will say, to his credit, season two does feature a trans man character who is a trans man social worker in the show. And
yeah.
They haven't overtly referenced that he's trans, but the actor is, and I think they intend the character to be overtly trans. They may do an episode later on down the line where it comes up.
Yeah.
I also will say what I like about this Pit scene, and I agree with you, like it is like the trans character is there to be dead named and then go
yeah.
away. I do think it does take some time to humanize her as well and like
show
she's a person.
Yeah.
And the show is a lot about competency porn, to use a term.
It is. It's like, absolutely. It's Star Trek without the stars.
That's exactly. It's very Star Trek. Like, everyone's very competent. And I know I was listening to a podcast. One of the things that the showrunners do for the show is they talk to real medical healthcare professionals, ask them what's something that you deal with, and then try to find a story or a way to put it in the show. So my assumption is that this whole bit here was a thing to show, like, hey, this is what happens. This is how it should happen in the medical system. Trans people are so regularly dehumanized within the medical healthcare system. We are treated like there's the thing for listeners. There's a thing called like trans broken arm syndrome.
Yep.
Whereas a trans person comes in for a broken arm and doctors will blame it on you being trans.
And it's, of course, it's because you're trans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so like, I do feel like this scene, while it is revolve around the character being dead named, I do like that it is showcasing, oh, this happens, but this is how competent doctors will actually deal with this and
Yeah,
show support for
exactly.
the trans person and humanize the trans person. And we get a scene about the trans person talking about like her interest in her job as a sommelier. So while I agree that the having a character that is there to just be like, we're gonna dead name her to showcase how not to do this, it
Yeah.
does have that. I think it is a really good thing to show. And
I think so too,
also
yeah.
season two has brought in trans rep. So
Yeah.
I think it kind of offsets it a little bit. So
Yeah, it's like, again, it's not the show's fault that the state of trans rep is so bad that if you do this one good thing, yeah, it's not the show's fault. And I've been taking notes on the Pitt season two as it goes, as I do every show. And so
I'm sure you'll
next
talk
year
about it
when we do
next
that
year,
report, we'll talk about it. I've been noting that guy every episode. I'm like, here he is. Is he good? Are they gonna say? Are they gonna say? Oh, I'm
I
just
know, I'm
waiting for
waiting.
it.
I'm waiting. I'm sure.
Come on,
I hope
say it,
at some
say it.
episodes they'll talk about like he'll have a
Yeah,
moment where he like talks about like, oh, this is my
I hope so
experience on
too.
it, like that. Yeah.
Yeah. In the finale, a cis woman says she thought the reason a cis man coworker went home early was because he's a pussy. No, come on, we don't need to do that. Pluribus, season one, zero. Ah, I love this show and the way it comments on the evils of colonialism, racism, xenophobia, assimilation, and the way fascism wants to flatten everything beautiful and unique about humanity into a dull beige paste. I am continually haunted by the way the hive erases culture and art, and how queer and trans people no longer exist within the hive. The show has sparked more amazing philosophical discussions than any other presently running, and I love that. It really makes you think. In the pilot, Carol's wife dies, and while that's absolutely a case of the bury your gaze trope, it serves as an important story point and is needed to help set up Carol's relationship with the hive. But this is another instance of there just not being enough good queer rep in shows, like I just talked about with The Pitt. If we had a lot of great queer rep, one queer spouse dying wouldn't be a big deal. It wouldn't even be a trope. It'd be like one member of a cishet couple dying, just another story point, provided that didn't also fall into the women in refrigerators trope. But when there is so very little good queer rep, seeing an instance of a happy queer relationship broken by a death again is difficult. In episode 8, Carol writes a new chapter in her book series, and the male love interest she'd always wished she could have made a woman, but felt she couldn't due to homophobia in the publishing world, is going to change to a woman via magical means. There is no mention of trans people or what transness means in the fictional world she created, though, or even acknowledgement of the character in her book being trans. When talking to Zosia, who represents the hive, Carol keeps pushing her to use singular pronouns to say I instead of we. Zosia struggles, and Carol says, quote, all the brains in the world, and you can't navigate an effing pronoun, which feels very much like a trans supportive joke, and I am here for it. I did like that. Yeah.
So the thing I want to say about this show that I
Yeah.
really love, and it ties into gender stuff, is if you listen to Vince Gilligan talk about the show, his initial idea for the show was that it would be a man character dealing with this, but because he liked Rhea Seehorn in Better Call Saul, he changed it to accommodate her. And what I really love about what this show has done, and it showcases that they have women and queer people in the writer's room, I checked they do,
Yeah.
is they make a lot of very intentional choices to not just be like, all right, it's a man. It's like this could have been any gendered character. Like the show very much
Right.
deals with her being a queer woman. It brings up her queerness a lot. One of the reasons that she's so against the hive mind is explicitly referenced that she went through conversion therapy and
Right.
she
Yeah.
doesn't like facing that. And so it's a show that very much like, oh, if you're going to change the gender of a character, it needs to come from that gender's perspective. Which
Right.
is something that you like, we sometimes see people being like, oh, well, we originally thinking a man and we cast a woman in it and we didn't change anything and it was just fine. Like the big example of this is the original Alien movie with Sigourney Weaver as Ripley. Character was originally written as man, they changed it to woman, didn't change anything about her. And like there's something to be said about that, but it also doesn't really bring her perspective, though they did sexualize her in her panties at the end of that
They
movie.
sure did. Would they have done that to a dude? Probably not.
No, they not. So
Yeah.
exactly. So like, but this is the show taking that time. And I
Yeah.
love including that they don't explicitly mention transness. I really love that end bit in episode 8 where she does change her character and they make a point of like, no, the character's not just going to be suddenly become a woman now. We're going to make it a textual point within the story. And it just
Yeah.
keeps going back into how the show really understands in a very interesting way queerness, transness, and how it metaphorically ties into being authentically your identity and seeking to be authentically your identity in a world where you literally have a force trying to turn everyone into a
Right.
beige paste, as you say. So it's like,
Yeah.
while there's no explicit trans rep in the show, there's very clearly using transness and gender as a metaphor for a lot of the ways colonization, racism at all, as you mentioned earlier, like is very much tied in up into how it controls people through gender and transness and queerness. So
Yeah.
I really love the show for a lot of that.
Yeah, me too. Although I will say I do not understand. I have encountered some people who are like all team Hive. They're like, the Hive is the best. And I'm like, are you paying attention to this show?
I've
They
been
are not good.
Yeah.
I've been watching. I've been because I think I've been. I'm actually gonna. I'm working on a video for my YouTube channel that I'm like
Yeah.
dealing with this because I'm gonna talk about like why some people really are into the Hive, because there are
Yeah.
Hive minds that are good in other science fiction. I see why people are drawn to them
Sure,
about the
but this
sense
one
of
is very specifically
yes,
not
yes.
good.
Yes, this one is
Yeah.
very specifically not good, and that's why I
Yeah.
wanted to talk about where it's like Hive, like the idea of having a community where we like are in touch with each other and understand each
Right.
other is good. This Hive mind is very specifically emotionally manipulative and trying to
Yeah.
erase identity. I think the most horrific scene in the show is that, without spoiling the opening scene of the finale,
Yeah, oh my God, it broke my
horrifying.
heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's
So,
so, yeah. So
yeah.
I'm like, you can't, I don't see how you can see that scene specifically, much less the rest of the season, and be on Team Hive.
It's been very hard not to start a whole podcast about Urbis. Yes, where we're so
like, it's just so tempting.
Yeah.
Poker Face Season 2, 2. In one episode, a guy calls a cis woman dude, and she later says, quote, I'm a grown-ass man. Not counting the dude as an intentional misgendering, it's just societal sexism and language, but her misgendering herself for humor is certainly a joke at our expense. Non-binary actor Nicole Orobana plays a bartender in an episode, but the character's gender isn't mentioned. Trans woman Patty Harrison plays Alex, a recurring role that is somewhat problematic. Her character is not mentioned as trans. In one episode, she joins a gym with a cis lady and calls the two of them gym bros. Weird thing to make a trans lady say, effectively misgendering herself, even if the character isn't trans. In the finale, it's revealed that her character Alex is a killer, but that's not all. She goes by Iguana and is so good at disguises that she can look like anyone. Everyone also thinks Iguana is a guy, but surprise, it's the trans woman. In this episode, she also says she, quote, choked off all her humanity and, quote, I don't really do physical pleasure. Despite the character never being mentioned as trans, they hit multiple harmful trans tropes. The surprise my gender is different than you thought trope, the trans people aren't human trope, and the trans people as tricksters trope, and the trans people can't experience physical pleasure after transition trope. All of them are bullshit, dehumanizing propaganda about us.
That last one in specific is like
right?
such a niche one to hit on, and it's really
right?
exciting
Yeah.
that they hit it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so while the character of Alex wasn't mentioned as trans, it sure as hell feels like the show itself treats her like she was and punished her and all the rest of us for it. Supremely uncool. And I'm not saying trans people can't be assassins or serial killers in stories. We can and should play evil and bad characters too. But if that is all we are, and along the way you reconfirm and perpetuate a ton of false bullshit about us, we'd be better off if you've never added us to your show at all. First, do no harm. Damn. Thanks for being here, Jesse.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Always fun to chat with you.
We'll leave it there for this week, but come back next week as we discuss trans rep and the rest of complete television seasons I saw, and then look at the overall numbers and compare them to past years. The results may or may not surprise you. Tilly Bridges and a Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, on Mastodon at tillybridgesandmastodon.social, and on Insta at heckyeahtillybridges. And you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of TillysTransTuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends.
We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. Signed copies of our comics and my book, Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix, are available on my coffee shop at ko-fi.com/Tilly Bridges. If you're listening on YouTube, it's so cliche, but please like and subscribe and take a few seconds to leave a comment. Those feed the algorithm and helps the show be found by so many more people. If you're listening on other platforms, ratings and reviews help just as much, and I'd certainly appreciate them. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening. I'm getting punchy.